Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is brought to you today in part by Audible, offering anytime, anywhere listening of your favorite audiobooks with the biggest selection ever, and it's all backed by Amazon. I just finished listening to Caleb and Kit by Beth Frabel, and I was really moved by this story of a boy who attends a camp over the summer and encounters in his walk through the woods a girl who quite captures his interest. Caleb, the protagonist, has cystic fibrosis, and the look into what this means and how it impacts Caleb's life and the life of his family was definitely undeniable in this story. There's even this particularly effective scene where Caleb tells the readers what the impact of cystic fibrosis means in terms of his use of the bathroom. We read the way Caleb struggles with how others perceive him and whether or not his friends are there for him. We also see a boy who is hurting and struggles to be understood, but finds hope from his pain in the form of Kit, this mysterious girl he finds sitting out on a rock in the middle of the woods by an old house. There were moments I was really rooting for Caleb, and others where I really felt like he was being a stubborn-headed jerk. And I think that balance is what made him feel so real to me, and unlike many other characters I've read before. This would be a great one to listen to as a family, as the story offers so many great points for discussion and connection to your own experiences. And Audible is offering a one-month free trial to listeners of this podcast. Visit the show notes for this episode at allthewonders.com to start your free trial and support this podcast with the same click of a mouse or tap of a screen. I hope you'll go try it out and see for yourself. Happy listening. Meet Tilly Walden. She did not embark on this story with a plan. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner, and this is episode number 400 of the podcast with Tilly Walden. 400, you guys. There are a few of you out there who have actually heard every single episode of this podcast. That's madness, and I'm flattered as all get out to know that you're listening right now and that you're here with me in this space. Thank you for the support and the love and for listening and for helping to champion these books and these bookmakers. I saved a really special one for you today. Tilly Walden's Spinning is a graphic novel memoir of her time as a competitive figure skater as well as her journey of coming out. It's my favorite graphic novel of the year for all it is and all it says and for all that Tilly accomplishes in both art and story throughout. I hope you'll have a chance to read it soon. Here's episode number 400 of the podcast with Tilly Walden. Welcome to the podcast, Tilly Walden. I am glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have been bouncing up and down waiting to talk to you. I know you probably know that because we talked before recording, but
it's true.
You kind of, one, you wrote a brick of a graphic memoir. A hefty,
ooh, I like that description, brick.
Weighty, you know, there's this sort of meta thing going on with your 400-page graphic memoir, which is that it's got a lot of, like, physical weight to it, and it also has, like, a great deal of emotional weight to it. I feel like these things must kind of be intentional. The universe is speaking.
There's definitely some subconscious stuff going on there, because I don't think I really meant that, but obviously some part of me really did. Like, I needed this book to be, like, a force in the universe.
Well, it's an amazing force, and we'll get into that. But why don't I first, Tilly, give you a chance to introduce yourself to the people listening. Can you tell the authors and illustrators and librarians and teachers out there who you are and what it is you do?
Sure. That's pretty easy to do. My name is Tilly. I am a cartoonist from Austin, Texas. I went to the Center for Cartoon Studies, which is a two-year comics program in Vermont. And ever since graduating from CCS, I have just been drawing graphic novels full time, and I've published 4 books as well as a full-length webcomic, which will be coming out in print soon and be my 5th book. But Spinning, my 4th book, which we have been referring to as a brick, which is accurate, is my sort of biggest work to date, and definitely I would say my most serious. I feel like I should twiddle my mustache while I say that, even though I don't have a mustache. But yeah, it's an autobiography about my 12 or so years as a competitive figure skater. And everything I do is written and illustrated by me. I work alone. That's who I am. That's what I do.
Tilly, your memoir, it's, you know, I don't speak to a lot of memoirists. That's a word.
It's a word. Totally a word. It totally is.
Nailed it. So coming into this, I was saying to you before recording, it's sort of this odd feeling of, I feel like I know you because I was reading about you. I was reading about your story. I was hurting for you. I was crying over moments in this book that were just touching, that I had to run and show my wife and say, I need you to read this now and just process it with me. You've written something so beautiful. And on top of that, you've illustrated it. The way the relationship you have with the human form, I feel like there are not many people that know how to draw and communicate through human form the way that you're accomplishing here. It's beautiful to have it be this story about figure skating in one degree. It's about figure skating, but to have it be drawn the way you've done it, it's beautiful. I don't know. You have a way of observing the human form and capturing that on the page that I felt the movement and I felt the toes turning in. There were a lot of moments that I was feeling.
Totally. It's so funny. Thank you for all your kind words. But it is like I'll meet people who have read the book and we'll just be having a conversation and I'll mention, I don't know, like this has happened where I'll be like, oh, and I'm staying in this cool hotel. I really like hotels. And the person's like, I know you like hotels because I read it in your book.
Oh,
you know, like I
yes,
have this,
that's
but,
right.
it's, but it's so funny. It's this weird balance of where if you have read Spinning, then you do know something about me. You know, I won't deny that that's there, but at the same time, you've also never met me as a person. You've only read this kind of external version of myself. So it's this really interesting balancing act, and it's also very interesting since the book came out, experiencing how other people see me and how they feel when they finally meet me.
Let me take that one weird step forward just so I can get that out of the way. You said about how people see you. I Googled you after reading just to be like, I like the way you draw yourself. I wonder what she looks like, because it occurred to me that if I was drawing myself, when my kindergarten through fifth graders see me draw myself, I tend to accentuate my smile or make myself have hair that I think is more decent than what I have. Or whatever. I the way that you draw yourself was you are much like what I see you drawing.
Although the pictures you saw, did you see one with my very short hair?
I saw one with very short hair. Is that current? Because you were holding Spinning.
That's current, yeah.
That's what I
Yeah.
figured.
I have since chopped it all off. But now it's funny because people read spinning and then they meet me and they're like, "Where's your hair?" And it's like, just because that's how I looked in the book does not mean that that's how I
That's
look
right.
now. But
Funny you should ask that.
I appreciate the sentiment. I
Book number
understand.
5 is called Where's My Hair? It's all about me cutting off my hair.
Well, but it's so funny because like people read this book and they see all these images of me. So there's this, you build this expectation that I'm gonna look the way I do in the
That's
book.
true.
You
That's true.
know?
You
So I
sort of
get it.
maintain a similar look from when the book starts to when it ends. So I get it. I get it. Makes
Totally.
sense. Okay, we're just gonna need to jump into this book. Why don't you
Let's do
first,
it.
Tilly, if you don't mind, can you share just a bit of a summary of the story about where this story takes us? And then I want to jump in because I did the cardinal thing that I don't do, which is I dog-eared so many of the pages
Oh,
in
how
this
dare
book.
you!
But
Oh my God, this podcast is over.
it's because it's my copy, Tilly. It's because this
I
is
really
one that I'm
don't
gonna
care.
hold on to and love forever. Oh no, I feel like that's the thing that librarians do. All the rules that we hold for our children, we break them when we know, like children do, when there's a most special thing that we don't want to forget, that we want to be able to return to.
Oh,
It's no different
that's great.
in so many
Well, I
ways.
can't.
We're the same as them and not.
Yeah, I can summarize spinning, although I've summarized it so much I feel like it's getting warped, but we'll see if what I say is
Oh, I
accurate.
look
It's my
forward to
book. You think I would know that what it's about, but
I like the
I
way
don't know,
you
man.
assert it's my book.
But spinning is, as I said before, it's a memoir about my time as a competitive figure skater, and it follows me from about the ages of 7 to 17, so over this course of 10 years of my life. But outside of it just being about the ups and downs of being a competitive figure skater, it's about coming out, it's about finding yourself, my journey, as cheesy as it sounds, my journey on and off the ice, but it's accurate. But yeah, it's really, I think, just a book about the struggles of growing up, being a young lesbian figure skater, and how that all played out for me, and how ice skating being a part of my life affected me, and how I ultimately found the power to leave the sport.
Yes, you. There are a number of things as I was approaching this going, what would I not spoil in this story for readers? What were moments that I felt like really echoed within me that I want to make sure that I protect for the readers to experience that on their own and process on their own? And so I want to approach the things that I ask you with a way that talks more about the event that happened and not about exactly the way you've depicted it in the book, because I want to
Oh,
make
sure.
sure as best as I can that I can allow that space for readers to go through it. But there were so many moments from the very beginning, Tilly, that I just felt hurting for this person you're showing in the book, for you being in this competitive sport that you have a gift for, that you're talented at, but don't want to be in. And are looking for a way out. And the way how beautifully that parallels with you also coming to terms with your sexuality,
Yeah.
owning your sexuality, but then the ownership when you come out. That was something that I just haven't read before. It was something that really shook me, that I identified with, that was something that is the thing that I want to talk to you about for a solid 30 minutes, personally. But I will, oh Lord, I almost literally said I will skate around it.
Oh my
Ugh, let's
God,
avoid
skating puns are
cliches.
totally acceptable. Don't
That
worry
totally is,
about
whew,
it.
thank you. I will allow it. That particular scene when you're, I don't know, we're like 3/4 of the way through the book, the scene when that ultimately leads to your coming out to the people around you
Yes.
was so hard for me, and I felt like it made me angry in a way that it felt like why does it have to be this way? A way that almost feels so cliche. But maybe it's because things become cliche because they're universal experiences to a degree.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's so hard to try and define coming out in any kind of universal way, because it's while there are common experiences that I think all LGBTQ people experience, there is so much about coming out is defined by who you are, who your family is, what the context of your life is, that it really for you feels wholly unique outside of the rest of the world. And it is I think even coming out in the best of situations is pretty traumatic. And
Yes.
I remember as a kid, and I have the same feeling now, feeling so frustrated with the fact that I even had to come out of the closet.
Thank
Because
you.
I why should I have to go through this announcement? Why should I have to put myself in front of people when really at the end of the day, the fact that I like other girls isn't much of their concern. You know, I and I'm glad, baby, that it seems like some of that sort of anger and frustration with the process of coming out came out in the story. But you know, I never even really intended to include such a scene in the book. But because I really going into it thought I'm just going to make a book about ice skating. That was all I wanted to talk about. But then I realized, you know, as I'm thinking about all my years on the ice, like there's this one point where my skating sort of stopped being very good and I wasn't doing well at competitions, and I thought, huh, like what was going on in my life? And then it's like, oh my God, of course. I was in the process of coming out. There was all this trauma, and of course I realized that to tell a complete narrative about who I was and what my experience was, it would have to include these kinds of hard moments. But I'm sure it was difficult to read. It was just as difficult to write for me. It was not a cakewalk. I still sort of marvel at the fact that I even finished this book. Like there were times where I was really just ready to throw it all out.
So I have two questions for you right on that topic because of what a big thing it is for you to communicate. So number one, I want to ask, why do it? Was it something that you felt compelled to do, something you felt like was important, or just something that just felt like it was time to do? I just, why for you?
I never actually felt particularly compelled to do it. I never had this strong sensation of I have to tell my story, but I did have this strong feeling that I didn't want to live in fear of my own memories anymore. And I didn't want to hide from myself, to hide from my own story. I just didn't feel like I could keep on living and creating while having this kind of dark spot on me. And I figured, you know, comics have been my passion and my way to communicate with the world and to communicate with myself. And so I thought then, well, why not merge these two things? I love making comics, they heal me. And I also am sort of tired of being afraid of my past. So let's just do it, you know, let's just go for it. And I did. I just kind of jumped right into it. Not intending to be a memoirist, not intending to do this whole tell-all thing, just out of the fact that I didn't want to be afraid anymore, and I didn't want to hold on to this in an unhealthy way, and that by putting the memories on paper, making it into a book, I'm not the only one carrying this story anymore. People carry it in a book form. It's out there. You know, other people now hold these memories with me, and I can't even explain to you how much easier that makes it for me.
Holy cow, let's just sit with that.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. And it's like we were saying before the podcast even started that once you release a book, it kind of becomes less of your own. And I think in a way, I was really chasing that. I didn't want to be burdened by this all on my own anymore. And I think a lot of people do the same thing through fiction and through creating in any way. When you put yourself into a creation and you share it with others, they hold a piece of you with them. And that's hugely powerful.
Tilly, the other thing, and this is perhaps the danger of memoirs. Not danger, that's the wrong way, that's too strong. I'll search for the right word as I tell you, though. But
Sure.
when someone feels as if they know you because of reading a memoir, the other risk, perhaps, is the word, is that for me, when I read it, I felt love for you. I felt like it just felt like hearing a person's story that was trusting me, despite me being a reader, despite that being our relationship, that you've written a story and I am reading it, it felt like you were trusting me with your story, and that through the course of this story, through listening, through observing, through listening, through the art that you were showing me, as well as the words you were using, it made me feel, I'm getting to that place again, oh my word, it just made me feel a deep swelling of love for you and for who you are, and for that feeling in you that brought your pen to the paper to share this.
Well, and I think that is, you're right. It can be a risk. And I think at times it can lead to disappointment when fans meet me and realize that we've never actually met. But at the same time, I'm putting myself in this hugely vulnerable position in this book and in this story. And because of that, people connect with it and it creates this empathy. And I can't, at the end of the day, I can't really see that as a negative, because if what I'm doing is creating love and empathy with other people, then that's a win. You know, we need more of that. Even if it's not tangible and it doesn't hold up, it's still really significant. And I feel kind of honored that something I could create could bring up such feelings in another person. You know, it's
I think
amazing.
That's a beautiful thing that is something that you were able to share. It is amazing. It's a you get to enter into that relationship. It's a beautiful thing to be in relationships. We like being in relationships.
We do.
And the relationship between storyteller and reader or listener is a special relationship. You, as you approach this, you sort of said a moment ago that you sort of just jumped in. You started making this story. Did you have an idea at the start for the scope of this story? Did you try to, I don't know, like pace it out by writing an outline, like of just beats first? Or how did you wrap your brain around making this story?
Sure. It was a very slow burn and I had a lot of help. And basically I started by just doing free writing. And then my teacher and friend, James Sturm, took that free writing and just pointed stuff out to me and said, I think this is significant. And it was funny because I looked at this and I was like, James, this thing that happened at school is not significant to my ice skating. And he was like, but it's significant to you. He told me to start thinking of this story in terms of who I was and not just who I was as an ice skater. And from there, all I did not embark on this book with a plan. All I did was just start drawing little scenes. Seriously, like every day I'd sit down, I'd draw like 2 pages and be like, this is a scene of me and my friend Lindsay on the ice. That's it. And I did that until I had about 100 pages of these kind of disjointed scenes. And from there, it was with the help of the folks at First Second and my editor, Connie, that we sort of took these 100 pages, laid them out and said, okay, this is a skeleton of a book. Let's turn this into a real narrative.
You are name dropping some people that I love. I love that you're name dropping people. James, I know from the cartoon studies, of course, but from Adventures in Cartooning with Andrew, who I believe also works at First
Second. I love Andrew. He's the best.
Yeah, and then Alexi lives by me. So fun that that you are connected with that group. And then Connie
is my life and soul.
Say, whenever her name comes up, man, the books that she works on, no kidding.
Connie is a literal goddess. I have only amazing things to say about Connie. I hope Connie listens to this podcast just so she knows how much I love her.
I love Connie is a literal goddess.
Yeah. Yep.
It's awesome to know that those hands in this story help to focus the story, to edit it, to really
absolutely
allow you to speak the story that you wanted to speak, and to also allow it to be as accessible as possible to all of us who don't know you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, I could not edit this story. I can kind of edit my own fiction, but I cannot edit my own life.
There
How am
go.
I supposed to cut a scene if it's like a real memory to me? It's completely impossible. You need help.
Yes. Yeah. You're right, because you just, everything is important to you. Everything feels important.
Of course.
Or things that don't feel important for storytelling's sake maybe are. Maybe there are things that you were writing that needed to be lifted up a little bit more because it would help us to understand context better in the case of the story.
Now I feel so grateful for all the people who helped me.
No doubt, no doubt. So there's this scene in the beginning of the story that I don't often read aloud comics on recording, but what you accomplish in here is just, I think it nods so well to how intertwined your understanding that you were gay with your understanding that you were in a position to leave skating. There's this moment of like daydreaming that happens in the beginning of the story. Perhaps you know what I'm talking about,
I
that
think I do.
I want to point out that young Tilly, you've moved to Austin. You are going through these different tests that you have to go through to compete, right? And so that's the part where I want to read that you write, because you keep using this word or this phrase that I was just tickled by it. You keep saying, "I kept passing," and I was like, double entendre, shall we? So you write, I'm gonna read here if you don't mind. You wrote, "I kept passing," and then to skip ahead, it says, another character says you headed home, and you say you're gonna watch the other testers first, and you say the other girls. Here we are. The other girls always seem so much more confident, so much more grown up. I never ignored the fact that I was attracted to them. I had known I was gay since I was 5. Now I was almost 12. A teacher's aide had shown me how to hold your sleeve when you put your jacket on. I still remember her hands on my shoulders. I didn't have a word to describe it yet, but in that moment I knew. Skating presented a strange debacle. I disliked the femininity of it all, yet was attracted to it nonetheless. I always tried not to stare too much, but. And then Dad comes in, "Hey, T, you're early." The narration continues, "But knowing for so long still didn't make it easy." And Dad says, "Congrats on passing." You say, "I knew it wasn't right, and I didn't tell anyone what I felt, so I quietly fell in love over and over again, never once thinking it could ever be real." And you say to your dad, "I always pass."
It is very bizarre for me to hear you read
Tilly,
that.
come on. The weight of that. I mean, we're talking about holding your memories. I just read the scene. I was gonna say the scene where, talking about the holding the teacher's aide's sleeve and touching her hand, that touch, and knowing that there was a feeling there, and then coming since age 5, through as you grew up to understand what that feeling meant. As we do, as we grow up, we begin to understand what attraction is. To let us in on that, that was gorgeous. And there's so many
Thank
other
you.
dog-eared scenes through this that, well, quite frankly, I'll probably keep just all to myself. And knowing that my reader friends will read this and we'll get to share them together, but that scene, man.
It was just, as I was making that scene, it felt so logical to put that moment in because it felt so defining and so important. For who I am as a gay woman. And I really think that so much about our experiences in childhood are about what is unspoken and what we feel rather than what we say or what is said to us. And the power of that moment is only something that is felt and that I think the visuals really help accent because it really just was this moment of intimacy that wasn't necessarily a moment of intimacy for this teacher's aide. She was just helping me put my jacket on. But for me, it was this life-altering moment that I deeply treasure. And I still think about her every time I put on a heavy jacket and hold onto my sleeve so it doesn't fall, right up my arm. That's how defining it was for me. And I'm also, in a way, very
touched that that was the moment where I realized I was gay, because I think a lot of people have moments that are fraught with much more complication and difficulty. But for me, I was almost so young that it was so pure. Yes. You know, there was nothing in me yet that was homophobic, that was wrapped up in all these cultural and political ideas. All that mattered to me was I needed help putting my jacket on. This woman helped me, and I knew I was gay. That was it.
It's such a beautiful, and as you said, pure moment. I love that that's what you recall. But more importantly, I feel the fact that it's something that is so at the forefront of your mind that you remember it all the time, that that memory is there built in, so that when you feel that stimulation of cloth on your wrist, on your arm, that it brings that back is wild, and is a testament to those things that get ingrained at that young age, and how
absolutely
how formative they can be.
Well, and memory is just so bizarre, you know, like this, that moment was maybe like 3 to 10 seconds long, and it's something I still think about. And then there are years of my life that I forget about, you know.
Yes.
It's so not linear, and it's not balanced. But in a way, that's kind of what I really enjoyed about making a memoir, is I felt like I didn't need to kind of try and wrap everything up in this neat bow. And then I didn't need to try and make my memories into something where the really big moments got a lot of time and the really small moments didn't. I felt sort of comfortable kind of mixing it up to try and be true to how I feel about my own memories.
I want to say first, I guess this is what's on my mind. As you talk, I'm seeing flashes of the book that are reminding me of different things as you're talking, which is a beautiful thing. So thank you for that gift. But as you're talking about time, I'm reminded of the incident in the book where you were going home and where there was an accident. There was a car crash.
Yeah.
And when I read that, and I look forward to readers reading that, I realized that I had completely halted reading the book. There was a moment that was just frozen for me as I read that.
Wow.
And it brings me into the thing that we had talked about before recording that I was so excited to talk to you about, which is the way that you treat light in this story.
Right.
Your treatment of light, because this book is when you look at it for what it is printed on paper, it is white paper with sort of this purplish black ink and yellow ink, and that's what you're working with. And when you
that's
limit
it.
Yourself that way, you open yourself up in amazing ways too. And Tilly, the way you use light in this book, as I said, it's a character. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, it was something I thought about a lot, and I really tried to use the addition of the yellow to accent that. But you know, I thought about this a lot before making the book and while making it. You know how when you like watch TV and movies, it really kind of drives me crazy that the lighting is always perfect, because I feel like that is just so not accurate for how life actually is. I found in my own memories when I was sort of reaching back to make this book, either there was too much light or there was too little. Very rarely did I find myself in a position where there was any kind of equilibrium. You know, like the classroom lights would feel too bright and kind of yellow. And in the locker rooms and ice rinks, there would be only like one light. It would feel kind of dim and dusty. And I really wanted to use the light to help evoke what the memories feel like to me. So like you were speaking about that incident with the car, and that was an instant where my memories are so shaped by the light of that experience, where it was the evening and it was dark and I could barely see myself. And then suddenly there were these headlights and suddenly there was light everywhere. And I couldn't actually understand where light was coming from, where the darkness was. It was totally overwhelming and overstimulating. And I wanted to kind of bring that in to the art, but you're right. I'm working with very little, with just the purple and the yellow, but I felt like that was almost more effective than trying to use full color for this book. Like I don't think that an experience where I'm talking about light and dark needs 10 colors. I need a dark color and I need a light color, and I'll make do with that, because at the core of the experience, that's what matters. It's kind of like boiling everything down.
Yes.
And I tried to do that.
I was flipping through just to see where else that yellow came in, and it is limited to light. And the way that you—
Oh, very limited, yeah.
The way that you, when you first moved to Texas, and we see the skating rink that you walk into, this giant skating rink, it's really one of the few pictures we get, one of the few illustrations we get, that is almost full page, and it's just basked in light, and it feels overwhelming. It feels huge. It feels in some ways inviting, and in other ways it almt feels alarming. To me, it just felt different to me.
Well, and ice rinks have very weird light, and it's something only a figure skater really understands, because we spend so much time in there. I mean, the ice really is reflective. When you're skating on the ice really fast, you can look down and you can see beneath your blades as the ice is rushing past you. You can see the lights above you in this bizarre reflection. And the fact that I wore glasses while I skated, whenever I was spinning a tidal drop, and my glasses would be kind of shaking on my face as I was like whipping around really, really fast, all the lights in the rink and the cold would kind of mix together in this crazy, crazy sensation. I mean, ice rinks are totally bizarre. Like, there's no other place really like them where they kind of have to artificially make this cold, bright environment for people to skate in. It's really weird.
It is weird. It's weird, too. I mean, my experience with ice rinks is just going ice skating. Like, oh, it's a summer day, but we can go ice skating. Or it's a whatever, let's go ice skating. And the atmosphere always feels to me like, in a bizarre way, it feels like I'm walking into a cloud. Like a very contained cold. Like, it should be cold everywhere. It should be the same cold everywhere. But obviously, when you step onto the ice, you're stepping onto water. So it should feel, more, I don't know, the word isn't humid, but it should feel like there's water under you. But it's
absolutely—
it's weird. And
well, and
you're
I,
getting
it.
A— no, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that I was always going to ice rinks early in the morning. And when you're on the ice, when you're practicing, there's often no more, I found, than like five people on the ice. And so not only are you like sleep deprived, in the first, you know, my memories of waking up, the first thing I remember feeling is this rush of cold air on my face. And then only being able to see like one girl off in the distance. It's just so— it's really like a weird dream.
I can imagine. It's just, you're bringing to it something that, the way you describe ice skating feels so much like it's a complex relationship. There's some things that are so beautiful that you show us, that there's techniques that you talk about. There's just different things that you show us to help us understand why your emotions about it are complex. But in showing us, it feels complex. I don't know. I don't even know where I was going with that.
It is. I mean,
it feels otherworldly to read about it.
Yeah, well, I think it's a very kind of different experience to spend most of your childhood in an ice rink,
yeah.
You know?
And you
when
did
I've
competitively,
gotten responses,
you were there all the time from very young.
You know, it really didn't feel like a sport to me. It felt like a lifestyle. And so many people ask me, now, after reading Spinning, well, why didn't you just quit? And I'm like, maybe you didn't get this from the book, but skating was fundamental to my existence. How do you quit something that is fundamental to your existence?
Yes.
I really didn't know. I didn't know how. It was like, how do you change your hair color? How do you grow taller? How do you leave ice skating? Those all seemed like questions that I couldn't answer. And it was my life.
How did you cut your hair? I mean, that feels like a thing to me too.
It was a huge step for me. It was huge because my whole life, my coach has always told me, I actually think I drew the scene, but it didn't make it into the book, where my coach is explaining to me that I can never cut my hair above shoulder length because then there won't be enough of it for a bun. She was just like, you will never do that. And I was like, I will never do that. I was a good little minion. But since quitting skating, I have fantasized about cutting my hair off and like getting in touch with my inner lesbian a little more. And what happened was, is I one night I went to sleep and I had this dream that I cut my hair, and I looked great in the dream. And that morning I woke up and I went to a bar to shave my head, and they did. And that was it.
It came from a dream. I love
it. It really did. I looked so good in this dream, and I have to go ahead and tell you that I can confirm that it looks just as good in real life.
Nice. I like it. I will count on an amazing author photo with this amazing short hair that we can put on this site to just show the amazingness. I love it. Tilly, I've had such a great time talking with you. I'm just going to say for the people that end up, for the people that listen, that we've had bumps in the road on our cooperation of technology. But
we have.
In returning over and over to this conversation and to you, it's the same feeling to me of returning to this book over and over and getting to read it. This is not a book that I could read in one sitting, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I got to spend time with you telling me a story, both here on this podcast and within your book. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing,
thank
Tilly.
You for reading.
I can't wait to jump in deeper to your webcomic, especially knowing that it's going to be printed. That's amazing. Your webcomic, is it fully wordless? It's pretty close to fully, if it's not.
It is. There is one chapter, I believe, that is completely wordless. And there are a lot of quiet moments, but it is in fact much longer than spinning, actually.
Well, I remember reading on your. This might have been something else when I was looking up photos of you. That sounded creepy.
No,
I remember
not at all.
Reading that you did something like, you do a lot of pages every week on your webcomic. You're pretty regular with it each week, of course, but you're doing 25 or 30 or more than that pages a week, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it has since ended, thank God, so okay. I don't have to do that anymore. But yeah, it was anywhere from like 30 to 60 pages a week. It was insanity.
But we can read it in its entirety as it exists as a webcomic. Still,
yeah,
now,
called on a sunbeam. On a sunbeam, you
on
can
a sunbeam,
just read
yeah.
it online all for free right now if you want to.
And I assume then it'll go through the same process that spinning did. That there will be editors that are working to perhaps patch some things and change some things and do editing magic, or is it just like
yes,
perfect?
there's some of that, and just sort of adapting the sort of web version into print. But yeah, that'll come out next fall.
Oh my word, you're. That's moving. That'll be
yeah,
here before we know
kidding.
It. Good for you. Wow. Well, listen, as spinning exists now, as you're in that moment, I hope that many, many connections come to you. I hope that the way children of all ages and adults that are reading this book connect with it and interact with it, I hope that they're able to express that to you. Because I know in this space that you've allowed me to express my feelings with you, you've just greeted it with such love and kindness, and I've really appreciated
Aww.
That. Is there anything,
Thank
Tilly,
you.
Is there anything about spinning that I didn't ask you that you've wanted to share that I should cover, that we should talk about?
Oh, Lord. No, you did quite a thorough job, I must say.
You gave me a place to just nerd out hard. I owe you hugs for this. Well, then let me bring it back to your readers and end with this. Tilly, I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Yes, there is a message. And I've been conflicted about what message to give them, but I've decided on this one. If there is a book you want to read, a story you want to see that you feel like you're searching for that you cannot find. So for me, it was that I could never find any books about ice skaters that felt real, then you can make that story. And if there's a book you really want to read that doesn't exist yet, you can write that book. And that's sometimes the story you really want to see in the world is something that you need to bring about. Yeah, I guess that would be my message.
The podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Julie Siegel Walters and Brian Biggs share This Is Not a Normal Animal Book, Julie's debut picture book and Brian's latest. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.